Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. I am your host, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. And I've been saying good afternoon or good evening or good morning, America, on the air for 15 years now. Today, thank you. Today is June 22nd, 2018, and I began the Inside Scoop on June 22nd, 2003, on a Sunday evening at WAGE, a 5,000-watt radio station in Leesburg, Virginia. It took me more than an hour to drive there. This hour, I'm going to be going through some really old broadcasts, including my very, very first broadcast on the air. If you look at my website, marklevinetalk.com, you will see I've done more than 2,000 radio shows. I know this because there's 412 pages of radio, just radio, on my website, and each page has five shows on it. There may be a few duplicates in there, but it's well north of 2,000. And that doesn't include the hundreds of television shows, which is a separate link. I'll have to focus on that on another day. I began in radio actually before I did the Inside Scoop, though. I began on radio with the Bush v. Gore decision, actually. I was a lawyer in Los Angeles, and I watched the U.S. Supreme Court decision, and I was following along very closely, and I was so astonished that the United States Supreme Court would violate all prior precedent and install George Bush as president against the law, that I wrote a little email. That's all we had in those days. That was pre-blogs, folks. I sent an email to about 20 people that explained the situation. I called it the Gore exception to the rule of law. It was a Q&A. It was kind of snarky and had a plan for action. And I sent it to about 20 people and urged them to pass it on and got thousands, tens of thousands of emails back. One of them was Michael Moore, who liked it so much, he retitled The Layman's Guide to Bush v. Gore. In 2000, there were more than 400,000 citations to my little email on the internet and Google. There's probably a lot fewer today. But that email that went around the world, that went viral before I knew what viral meant, got me Henry Waxman. Congressman Henry Waxman wrote me. Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk wrote me, her Supreme Court clerk, to say that he agreed that his boss was a hypocrite, and could he teach it at Rutgers? And, well, it actually got me into radio. I got, I think, 17 different radio hits out of this little email I sent. You know, to this pre-spam days. It's a day when there really wasn't much spam, and people actually read their emails because it was exciting. You've got mail! Not like today when we get hundreds of emails a day. Got a number of radio shows. Say, who are you? I said, I'm just a lawyer in L.A. Well, we love your piece. Could you talk about it on the air? And I was invited in New York, Los Angeles, and all over the state of Florida, which was still reeling from the 2000 decision. And one of those broadcasts on air, I decided to record. Put on my cassette tape. I recorded my radio broadcast. That, you know what? I need to find that because I don't know where that is. I need to go through, rummage through. I don't throw anything. I need to rummage through a drawer and find that broadcast. But then most of you know the rest. I was hired by the Congressional Black Caucus to write the brief challenging the Florida electors, all because of that email. I wrote that brief. Then I was hired by Congressman Barney Frank to be his legislative counsel on the Hill for 3 years. And then in 2003, I'd been with him for 3 years, and well, the Republicans won a big re-election in 2002. They controlled the presidency. They controlled both houses of Congress. And I kept learning things that were going on that the public didn't know about. And I actually thought I could do more good exposing to give the inside scoop, that's where the name comes from, as to what's going on in Washington. All the news, I used to say, the government doesn't want you to know. because, well, the Bush administration, my thought was hiding a lot of information from the public. This is way before, obviously, Trump did much worse. But, you know, I began in radio in a very adverse time for progressives in American history. I feel like we've come full circle. And I went to several radio stations, the really close ones. The ones in D.C. didn't want to have me on the air, even though it was a Washington show. And I kept going further and further out. And I found this station in Leesburg, Virginia. If you don't know Leesburg, Virginia, it's about an hour outside of D.C. At the time, it was this small town, kind of Washington's grown to meet it. But at the time, it was a small town. It's a small radio station, WAGE. And the radio manager by the name of Chris King, I played for him my appearance on the air. I don't remember which station. I think it was one of the ones in Florida, talking about Bush v. Gore. And I said, you know, all radio is right-wing. Every single – Rush Limbaugh, and they're all right-wing. I think we could have progressive radio. He said, well, Mark, it's just never worked anywhere. And I said, well, why don't we try it? So on June 22nd, 2003, Sunday night at 8 p.m., he let me have my show. Now, if you know radio, Sunday night at 8 p.m. is dead time. First of all, radio stations, a lot of people don't know this, they have to lower their signal when sun goes down. So because they have to lower the signal when the sun goes down, due to this old 1930s law about old AM radio stations. That's, by the way, why late at night you can hear a station from far away, from Chicago or something, from hundreds of miles away, because of that old radio law. But all the local stations have to turn down their signal. So 8 p.m. on Sunday actually worked June 22nd, 2003, because it's the summer solstice, right? It's the longest day of the year. My show didn't have its signal turned down until about 8:50 p.m., given daylight savings time and the summer solstice. It actually got out to a decent audience. Now, progressively, it would get shrunk. But I was heard that first day by several people who called in. And my very first show, well, I decided to talk about Homeland Security because I knew that George Bush was neglecting Homeland Security. I wanted something that would appeal not just to liberals, but to conservatives too. And I felt like Homeland Security was something that, well, wasn't necessarily a liberal issue. It was just an American issue. So I found this sort of driving beat. I threw away this. But I'm going to play for you my first minute and 25 seconds on the air 15 years ago on WAGE.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, where we discuss the news from Washington, D.C., that the government and its lapdog supporters in the media don't want you to know about. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and I'm excited to have you here on my very first show. I've been working as a lawyer in Congress, and I've been amazed at how much information we have inside the Beltway of Washington that is never communicated to the public. And that's why I'm here giving you the Inside Scoop. Topic today, Homeland Security. We're going to discuss what the government should have known about September 11th and could have done to stop it. We're going to talk about the threat that Saddam Hussein posed or didn't pose to Americans. And we're going to talk about the types of attacks terrorists are planning today on American soil and why the Bush administration, despite all its rhetoric, is doing so little to stop them. Now, this is a call-in show. And I want you to call in whether you agree or disagree. In fact, I particularly want those who disagree. With each Inside Scoop, we have Challenge the Caller questions. So
We stopped the Challenge the Caller questions. That's something that didn't last very long. But a lot of it was, well, me talking with people with whom I disagree. I regularly bring conservatives on the air. I was doing that from the beginning. The beginning, Good Evening America. I say Good Afternoon America. That was from the very first show. And, I was encouraging people to call in from the beginning. There are differences. I think my voice was a little higher then. People have remarked how young I sound. If you want to see how young I looked, there's a picture on Facebook that shows me in my first month on radio looking a heck of a lot younger than I do today. Where is that guy? But you got to remember 2003. It was not even 2 years after September 11th. It was a big deal, and to me it was a big deal that the Bush administration didn't focus on the signs that were there, and they should have focused on them. And also he was trying to tie in the summer of 2003, he was trying to tie September 11th to justify the war in Iraq. So that's where America was. That's where my head was. Here I am a minute later into the show.
So we begin in 1999, December 31st. I don't know if you remember that time. I know I do. I remember watching as the different nations celebrated the beginning of the new millennium. And we went, we started in the East with Japan, and then they went across Asia. They showed London and Paris and some islands, New York, Washington, L.A. It was a very peaceful time, if you remember, all the fireworks. What we didn't know now, excuse me, what we didn't know then, but what we know now, is that at that very time, Al-Qaeda was planning between 5 and 15 terrorist attacks against Americans. Two of them, Clinton managed to foil. The others apparently were never tried. One was a guy coming in across the Idaho border from Canada. The other was coming in to Vermont. And there was a particularly vicious attack planned on LAX, the Los Angeles International Airport. So by the time Clinton was leaving office, they were well aware what was going on and that Al-Qaeda was a particular danger. One of the things Clinton did is he set up a plan to stop Al-Qaeda. And this is something that, frankly, hasn't been discussed much in the media, and that's why I'm bringing it to you on the Inside Scoop.
So you can see already in my very first show, and this is, by the way, 2 minutes into my very first show. First of all, one of the things that I, as I'm listening, and I went through a lot, I went through 6 hours, by the way, of old tapes to go to find my first show. But first of all, I've always been telling stories. From my very first show, I was telling stories. I was talking about what was then not that long ago, 4 years earlier, 3 years earlier, the millennium and my memories of that. But also, I was trying to give the inside scoop. I've always been trying to give listeners information that they might not get from other sources, from media sources. And yeah, there I was on my very first show. The other thing I remember about my very first show is that it was hard to talk for an hour without stopping, without repeating yourself. I had notes. I don't do that anymore. When I made a mistake on my first show, I just sort of corrected myself. I remember it was hard work. How do you talk for an hour straight? And then later on, I would do shows 3 hours just talking. But the trick in radio is always storytelling. You got to remind people of a feeling. And I guess I did it from my very first show, talking about the millennial. Let's go just the millennium, I should say, not the millennial. See, I correct myself still. Let's go to the last minute or so of that very first show.
We're back on the Inside Scoop. Just a few minutes left. What we want to do is try to figure out whether it's more like 1984 or The Matrix. And, you know, when you had The Matrix and you had the machines controlling everyone's thought, one of the things I was thinking was, you ever been in an audience and somebody stands up to give a standing ovation, and you really don't feel like standing up, but hey, you know, everyone else is doing it. And sometimes you feel like you have to. I'm worried that a lot of people in America just aren't thinking about these issues. And when the president stands up and says he cares all about Homeland Security, people are thinking, oh, well, he really does. And that's why I want to tell you what we know in Congress, what we know who've worked here, that the president just isn't providing for the country like he should.
So, again, I'm always telling a story. I'm thinking about standing ovation in the theater. My voice does sound higher. Now, to be fair to me there, yeah, I sound younger. But this was recorded on a cassette deck. This is before CDs, folks. This is on a cassette deck. And in fact, to find this old show, I went up to this dusty shelf that I hadn't gone to in many, many years and had to find the cassette deck. I was looking through them. And I saw one labeled Inside Scoop 7 and 8. That was on one side my 7th show, on the other side my 8th show. I had done so few shows then, I was just numbering them. And then I went to dates. Like I saw one that said July 27th. But I didn't put the year because it had only been 2003. I didn't add the year until, well, 2004. And those cassettes still worked. I had to rig up some old equipment. And then to get it into my computer, my new computer didn't have the right entries. I had to go into an older computer. It took some work to get this audio to you. But it's all right there, still on my website, marklevinetalk.com. If you go to my website, you'll see every show I've ever done is listed there, but the links from about 03 to 08 or so are broken because I've changed servers and all that stuff. But these shows, the ones that I'm signing today, are all back there. Eventually, it's my goal to get every single show I've ever done right back on the air for you. But one more thing I want you to note that I talked about in my very first show. I talked about people reluctant to not join a standing ovation and feeling the peer pressure of joining in. And I got to tell you, these themes from my very first show still ring true today. All right, we're going to come back after a break. I got a lot more to share with you. We'll see how much we get done.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Today is the 15th anniversary of my first appearance on radio, June 22nd, 2003. I played my first show. I now want to play some of my second show. Just about a minute clip here, but the thing that I find interesting is that I've always been into history. And apparently on my second show, I was talking about the Spanish-American War.
At that hearing, when Representative Silvio Reyes, a Texas Democrat, asked a number of the intelligence officials whether any of them had felt political pressure in the development of their intelligence reports, all of them, except for that one official, Mr. Westerman, remained silent. Now, they didn't say no, they felt no pressure. They didn't say yes, they felt pressure. They remained silent. Why are they silent? If they didn't feel pressure, they should say so. If they did, I would hope they would say so. And I would hope the president would get out on front of this and say, look, we have nothing to hide. Investigate as you will. I'm afraid that there may be a reason why he's not doing it. So I don't know whether there's a vast right-wing conspiracy, but I'll tell you this, Frank. History tells us to be careful. I don't know whether you've studied this in American history, but going way back to the Spanish-American War in 1898, there was a ship that the president said, McKinley at the time, was blown up. And it was the Maine. Turns out it was a boiler accident. But the rallying cry, remember the Maine, led us into a war with Spain that led us to conquer the Philippines and Cuba and Puerto Rico and some other places. Now, it may well be that it was a good thing to conquer those territories. But I would hope you agree with me, Frank, that it wasn't a good thing for the president to lie in order to get us into war. Bringing us into the present day, of course, in the Vietnam War, we have the Gulf of Tonkin incident, where a Democratic president seems to have lied to Congress and the American people.
So already from my second show, I'm talking about presidential lies. Who knew 15 years later that presidential lies would not be the exception? They'd become the rule. So I've been given history and examples and details since, well, my very first show on the air. When I come back, I'm going to play with you some of my exchanges with people I disagree with, including an ex-gay leader. Right back after this.
Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Special anniversary show. I began broadcasting the Inside Scoop on WAGE, a radio station that no longer exists in Leesburg, Virginia, on June 22nd. 2003. And I played for you some of my very first shows, my first show, my second show. After I was about a month, really just about 6 weeks on the air, and remember, I'm only doing it Sunday evenings, although they did give me a better slot by August. They gave me 7 p.m. instead of 8 p.m., which was useful because, you know, the radio signal went down at sundown, and sundown was, you know, later in the summer, but as we start getting into August, the day gets shorter. So I was really glad by August to move to 7 p.m. And I was doing what I normally do. I was attending protests and generally talking to the other side. That's something I've always done. And now I was out. I worked for Barney Frank. I was out as an openly gay man. But on the radio at the very beginning, I thought the best way to deal with gay issues was just simply to ask tough questions and not necessarily make it personal. I would come out later on the air. But this 6 weeks in, I went to a protest against the ex-gay movement. And these are people who were using conversion therapy to try to stop people from being gay. And I met a woman there who was part of this movement and invited her to appear on my radio show. I guess at the time it wasn't, I guess, as controversial as it is now. It was always a terrible thing, but society's changed. It's evolved a lot since 2003. And I wanted to just to show how bad this was without, you know, I wanted to prove it without necessarily saying it. I wanted people to see that it was bad. And by the way, in this show, in 2003, I predict that Massachusetts is going to start allowing same-sex marriages. That's actually in this show. And, of course, a year later, Massachusetts would become the first state to have same-sex marriage. But I want you to hear this interview because I want you to hear how I deal with people who I strongly, powerfully, personally disagree with. And yet I want to show they're wrong rather than just tell them they're wrong. So here's about 3 minutes conversation with a woman by the name of Jay Beatty, a supporter of Exodus International, which tries to convert gay people into being straight. My music changed. Keep going. Sorry, Mark.
I know that the American Psychological Association completely discredits this science and says that it doesn't have any basis. But, you know, if people want to help people, let me tell you my concern. When I was there at that protest, and I also, by the way, I want to hear from any callers who want to comment on this. Again, the number is 703-777-1200 or 877-57-SCOOP. I talked with some people, and I'll tell you what I saw. I saw parents bringing 16, 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids, usually against their will. Saw a lot of complaining. A lot of times they'd want to talk to us out in the protest, and their parents would shepherd them inside. And I guess my question for you, Jay, is if someone doesn't want to change their sexual orientation, let's say you got a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old, and their parent really wants them to change, but they're happy being gay. What do you think should happen in that case?
Well, it sounds like that's a family that has some issues that they need to address. So my first response would be they probably do need therapy.
Okay. But you know, what kind of therapy? Therapy to change the kid's sexual orientation or therapy to convince the parents to accept him just the way he is or she is?
Well, I would want to explore those issues on both sides and look. See, my experience has been that when you heal the hurt, the rest of it, you know, finds its own place.
And
there are people who are quite comfortable with their sexuality, and you know, I'm not going to go beat them over the head with a Bible.
Okay.
But for the people that are struggling, why would you deny them the chance and the choice to make their own decision?
Well, certainly people can make their own decisions, but perhaps the struggle is not with so much with being gay is accepting that they are gay and accepting, you know, that society is often prejudiced against gay people. You know, one of the things I remember studying when I studied history is that particularly in the 50s and 60s, but even before then, you had a lot of African Americans who were profoundly unhappy being black. And they were unhappy being black because there was a lot of racism in the country. There still is some today, but there was certainly a lot at the time. And so they would get things like skin whiteners and hair straighteners. Mm-hmm. And they would try to not be black anymore. And they would work hard. And I guess I would think that usually it failed. But I guess that's how I see the ex-gay movement.
So I was trying not to yell at her, scream, even though obviously I think what she was supporting was profoundly abusive. But to give historical analogies, you know, argue with history. And I was arguing about blacks that wanted to be white and obviously implying that that's not the solution to the problem. It's interesting, as you note, I said if the kid wants to be gay and the parents don't want them to be, why not just let the kid be gay? And she says, well, I think the family needs a lot of therapy then. today, I think more than ever, this is a completely discredited movement. But I like to hope that I played some tiny role in helping to discredit it. So that's 2003. Moving on to 2004, my main focus, of course, was the President of the United States, George W. Bush. The election was coming around the corner. John Kerry would be his opponent. And I've always believed in speaking truth to power. I've always believed in telling it like it is. And as I look through some of those shows, and I'm just looking one by one through my shows through 2003, 2004. I did shows on media control on as early on, talking about Sinclair Broadcasting and Rupert Murdoch. This is as early as August of 2003. I did shows on the economy. I did a show on illegal immigration. Probably, I don't know if I'd use those words today, but that's what I called it, December 14th, 2003. Shows on Medicare, intelligence failures, talking about the re-election of President Bush, talking about the Patriot Act, which I had worked on in Congress. I gave my endorsement. I actually endorsed Wesley Clark for president in January of 2004. I guess that didn't last long. To run against John Kerry. I talked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell early on. I even had a show on Bush education policy. One of my big things that I focused on in February of 2004 was George Bush being AWOL, absent without leave, the fact that he left the military without getting permission, which was a big deal, if you remember, back in 2004. And I shared detailed documents about why George Bush quit flying and why, well, the media didn't focus on it, or even his whether he concealed a cocaine charge. All these things that seem, well, kind of, quaint today. Did a show on same-sex marriage as early as February of 2004. Did shows on political manipulation of science. Again, I'm just reading down the list of things I did. I talked about insider trading. I talked about vote, whether your vote was safe. I've done several shows over the years on protecting your right to vote, making sure that, in fact, advocating for paper ballots back when there weren't many of them. Now most states have them. They didn't in that time. Did lots of shows on the Iraq War, on the 9/11 Commission, on the Bush-Saudi connection. One of the things that I used to do for fun is I would take a George Bush, and I should do this again. I should bring this back. In fact, I got to say, Seth Meyers does this today. What I did was I would take the audio from a presidential press conference. We don't know what those are because Donald Trump has not had a press conference since his first month in office, the longest of any president of the United States in modern history. But George Bush used to give press conferences, and I would ask the questions and have him respond to them. It's just interesting to me because today I've seen Seth Meyers on his show do it with Karen Huckabee Sanders. But back in 2004, I was interviewing George W. Bush and playing the feed to make a really good interview. First, though, I had to totally change my music. That I really didn't like that ugly music. It had a much sound – more me, I think, sound – so let's play my new bumper that began in 2004. I don't know. The strings were a lot friendlier to me, I thought, than that driving sound. But listen, as I interviewed George W. Bush, and by the way, one caller from Taiwan writes on that show that he thought it was so realistic, he thought I was actually interviewing George W. Bush. Here's my interview with the former president of the United States.
As I mentioned, I oftentimes think about what I could have done differently.
Okay, all right.
I can assure the American people that had we had any inkling that this was going to happen, we would have done everything in our power to stop the attack.
Mr. President, that is an inkling. Look, George Tenet, director of the CIA, and I don't like George Tenet. I think he's been a complete failure, all right? I'll just say that right at the outset. I think you should have fired him. But George Tenet said that he knew about Musawi. He knew about the 20th hijacker, the guy that didn't want to learn how to take off or land planes, but just wanted to learn how to fly them, the guy that had radical al-Qaeda ties. He knew about them. He met with you every single day. Now, look, either he told you about it or he didn't. If he didn't tell you about it, I would think you'd fire him. And if he did tell you about it, Well, I guess that's why you have him here. Did you meet with George Tenet? Did you talk with him?
Met with Tenet all the time. I obviously met with my principals a lot.
But you met with your principals, but you didn't have any meetings about terrorism. You had 40 principal meetings in the first 8 months. You talked about everything, stem cell research and abortion and missile defense. You never talked about terrorism.
A lot. We talked about threats that have emerged. We had a counter-terrorism group meeting on a regular basis to analyze the threats that came in. Had there been a threat that required action by anybody in the government, I would have dealt with it. In other words, had they come up and said, this is where we see something happening, you can rest assured that the people of this government would have responded, and responded in a forceful way.
In other words, if Osama bin Laden had sent you, Mr. President, an engraved invitation, Dear George, on September 11, 2001, at 9 a.m., we're going to hit the World Trade Center.
Yes.
And we're going to do it at 20 to 9 in the morning, and it's going to be these four flights.
Yeah.
And we're going to have these terrorists on the flights.
Yeah.
And we're gonna take off at this time, and we're gonna use these knives to get around the security measures,
yeah.
And we're gonna use these immigration violations to get in.
Yeah.
If you'd had all that information, then along with the engraved invitation signed Osama, then you would have done something about it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then you would have done something. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad to know that there's something that would make you do something about it.
But there was nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government, that could envision flying airplanes into buildings on such a massive scale.
Well, how about on a minor scale? I mean, it was in your PDB, folks. Mr. President, the Presidential Daily Brief specifically mentioned hijackings. How about on a minor scale?
So there I am, arguing with George Bush. And like I said, comedians today do that regularly. I don't know anyone that did it when I'm sure someone did it, but there I was in 2004 arguing with George Bush. I didn't just take on the president. I took on the Supreme Court. In fact, in a show that is unique among the more than 2000 radio shows I've done called How Do You Solve a Problem Like Scalia, I actually sing on air. Now, I've only done it on this one show on April 30th, 2004. I haven't done it since. That's probably very good for my radio career that I haven't done it since. But out of all the 2,000 shows after break, I'm going to play the one time I ever sang on the air. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, to a very special 15-year anniversary show. I've been going through old shows, and I may just get through the first 2 years, 03 and 04. I did shows on healthcare way back in 03 and 04. I did shows on George Bush and the Constitution. I did shows on torture in American prisons, and that was before I found out what was going on at Abu Ghraib, when I later did shows on torture in Iraqi prisons. Every week I'd have Election Tuesday. That was my chance to debate the election. At that time, it was a presidential election. I always brought a conservative on the show with whom I disagreed. I did that regularly, every Tuesday, once a week. I did a show when Ronald Reagan died, on the mixed legacy of Ronald Reagan. That was an interesting show. That actually got me fired from an online radio broadcast, because I was condemning him three quarters of the time, but I was praising him about one quarter of the time. And the progressive person that hosted my radio podcast wanted me only to talk negatively about him. And I guess that's the first time I was fired from radio. I went on Air America on its very first show. I came this close to being Rachel Maddow. She started actually a few months after I did. She knew someone at Air America that I didn't know, and she got in. And listen, she's very, very talented. I don't knock her at all, but I still wonder what might have been. Did a wonderful show, I remember, with Sybelle Edmonds on spies in the FBI. fascinating story that's still worth hearing today. This is in June 2004 about really the FBI being an organization we have to be careful about. I've long felt that, you know, you got to watch the FBI carefully. I did shows on the Bush-Saudi connection. I did a show on Reverend Sun Myung-moon and his coronation. But probably coronation, by the way, when I say that, I mean it. He was actually crowned in Congress by some idiot members of Congress who did not realize that they were crowning a crazy cult leader. Just shows you what you can get away with sometimes in Congress. I broke all that. But sometimes it's not just hard-hitting news, but having fun. And one day, I don't know what possessed me, but I decided to actually sing on air. You'll hear I am not a singer, but Antonin Scalia has annoyed me since the day I met him when I was at Yale Law School and was challenging him. Of course, he was still alive when I did this show. And yes, I actually sung a little ditty on the air. Didn't do it before, and I haven't done it since. April 30th, 2004, the one time I sang on air.
Here we go. All right. This is hard to do. All right, let's go. How do you solve a problem like Scalia? How do you take a snake and stop its bite? How do you find a word that means Scalia? A strict constructionist, a hypocrite, a fright. Many a things you know you'd like to tell him. Many a things he ought to understand. But how do you make him stay and listen to all you say when tape recordings of what he says are banned? Oh, how do you solve a problem like Scalia? How do you get a Supreme Court justice canned? All right, that's it. No more singing for the rest of the hour. We'll go back to serious debate. But this way, if you wanted a song that you could hum along as you go around hating Justice Scalia and the Supreme Court, now you have one. Producer, you can come out from under the table. It's okay. Anyway, I do want to talk seriously about Justice Scalia and specifically about the Supreme Court.
And, of course, I spent the rest of the hour talking about him then. I don't know why I'm highlighting the one show where I sang. I can't believe I actually did that. So what the heck? So we've spent an hour together, and I've only gone through really my first year in radio from June 2003 to April 2004. That tells me I'm going to have to go through a lot more of these shows. I'm not going to get to all of them. I'm not going to get to all the ones I loved. We have had great shows. We talked with freedom fighters in Damascus from Damascus. That was a very powerful show. One I'm going to play soon is one about the real torture of American teenagers in these abusive treatment camps. I got some clips from that. That was as early as 2005. I've done 2,000 shows. There's a lot there. And listen, if you go through my website, marklevinetalk.com, and there's a show from 06, and I don't have the audio up, the audio link is broken. That's because I changed my website several times. I think I have everything since about 2009. Let me know. I should still have the show. I'll fix the link and play it for you. I've enjoyed being on air 15 years. It's given me a chance to talk with you and not just scream at the television set and throw things. It's been kind of therapeutic for me. As I talk about life and share the history that I love, share talking about the country that I love and what we can do to make it better. I think that actually being on radio has helped me be a better delegate, better able to explain at a moment's notice what's going on, to stand up on the floor of the House of Delegates and to say my piece. And it's actually good training for public speaking, which I've had to do a lot of as delegate. So there's something about radio. It's just better than TV. You can tell a story you just can't tell on TV. And I hope you will keep listening to The Inside Scoop. We're going to do more of this anniversary show in weeks to come. This is Mark Levine. Happy anniversary to The Inside Scoop. Talk to you next week on Monday.